Hello, and welcome to Wild Bros Country. I'm your host, Emma Didi, and I have absolutely no idea what's going on here. But thank you for joining along anyways. And hey, listen, if you like the shit you hear, please consider becoming a member on Patreon. Hope you enjoy this episode. I don't know what it's about because I pre-recorded this, but hope it's worth your time. Thanks, y'all. Love, Em. In this episode of Wild Bros Country, I talked to Danica, a small business owner in rural northern Alberta, who, at the age of 29, left her full-time gig as a labor and delivery RN and opened her own spin studio in the Lakeland, which is now known and loved as Wheel Fit Co. Since then, she has expanded to include yoga and a group bar class, and has franchised her OG model to include two more locations in the surrounding area. As is true for the fitness industry as a whole, the pandemic has taken a massive toll on her business. I became aware of Danica only through social media, and this is where it all gets a little bit heated. Like some other small businesses across Alberta, when faced with the most recent set of restrictions, Danica has taken a public stance and has vowed to deny the restrictions and to keep her spin studio open, which I personally couldn't be any more opposed to. The first time I watched the video she released on her Instagram, I was livid. A comment I had typed out read like this: "Wow, I cannot imagine a more oppressed group of people than white women in a spin class." Amongst other hot takes I had typed out and then deleted. I will play the audio of the video Danica uploaded to Instagram.
So I had big plans to film an Instagram IGTV video today while I was in the studio, and had a nice big background and could really showcase the business that I've built over the last 3.5 years. But I am feeling the call to show up authentically and vulnerably with tears in my eyes, because this is how truly close to my heart this is. The decision to keep my business open despite the most recent public health measures is not one that is made selfishly. It is actually quite the opposite. As I sit here and I read emails of people thanking me for fighting for them, because they were in places where they were considering taking their own lives, and showing up and feeling that connection and that togetherness has been part of their recovery, has been part of their self-care and their road to wellness again. The facts are, we have had zero transmissions in my studio. The facts are, this is our third closure, and I don't know why we keep taking the brunt of this when we clearly are not the problem. That the outbreaks are still happening, the numbers are still climbing, yet we remain tightly chained in our operations and suffocated in not being able to provide our services to those who really need us. And it is evident that we are needed. The fact is, we have incurred a lot of debt, and closing for a third time will put us over the edge for a lot of people, a lot of the studios in the province. And it's just really, really challenging to be in this position and to see the health officials continuously slap the industries, like the fitness industries and the health and wellness industries, because we are part of the solution. 78% of the people who passed away with COVID-19 as their final diagnosis were overweight or obese. These are the numbers that the CDC and the WHO are putting out there, and not one politician, not one medical health officer have addressed this issue. And I'm not saying that all we're doing is providing you with a place that is for weight loss, but it's for mental, physical well-being. When you move your body, when you get to go to a place and move through your shit, that translates in everything else that you do in your life. That translates to making a better choice for your meal. It translates to showing up with your kids more, being more present. It shows up and it translates in your job, in being more more conscious and in being more present. It trickles in all the other aspects of your life. So to say that we're not essential and to not address this elephant in the room by our higher ups is, it's concerning besides anything else. I'm a registered nurse as well. So let me tell you, I am very well versed with the disease processes and personal protective equipment and the load on our healthcare system. Let me tell you, it is not new. It is not something that has just all of a sudden happened in the last year that we're concerned about hospital beds. I worked as an RN on the wards where we were in constant overflow, and this was well before a pandemic. And let me tell you, the admissions that we had were diabetes, heart conditions, lung conditions, people not taking care of themselves. That is what's taxing our system, not COVID-19. COVID-19 is a byproduct. COVID-19 is the new flu that we haven't seen any cases of this year, by the way. So make your own informed decisions. And I am just really grateful for the community support that has been shown to me. And I hope that this will be a pivotal point in history for us as Albertans and for us as a collective. Because the more that we speak up and the more that we stand up for our rights as Canadians, as Albertans, as humans, because what do we need and what do we want? We want to feel connected, loved, purposeful, out there doing something that feels good, and we hit all the marks. When you walk in through our space, we hit all the marks. And it's all about the collective, and it's all about creating consciousness, and it's all about showing up and doing the work and being of service. So that's my TED Talk.
Now, I know how this makes the people in my circles feel. I can literally hear your comments. I can hear you screaming at me for platforming her. I can hear you calling her selfish. I can hear you calling her entitled. I can hear you saying all the same things I initially thought when I first watched the video. And with that being said, here's my conversation with Danica. And here's a warning. The conclusion we come to may shock you.
I didn't know you, but different people across my social media platforms sent me your video, and I think they were kind of expecting me to, as I have in the past, kind of attack it and be like, this person is ignorant, this person is, I can't believe that they're doing this. And that is what I have done in the past. It obviously hasn't worked. It doesn't, you know, in the moment, it does feel kind of good to just be like, you know, what a piece of shit or whatever. But then, you know, like I'm not gonna lie, I was very frustrated that night as I watched your video, and I had some things written out that were aggressive, that were mean. And then I started going through your comments and I realized, you know, like these are people that I cared about a lot at one point in my life. And these aren't bad people. These are people who are struggling to get by. These are people who own businesses. These are people with families. And it just kind of opened my eyes, because the other people that I've kind of yelled at or dragged on social media or whatever, I didn't know them. I didn't know their story. So it was very easy. And then it was just a pause for me at this point. And I was like, wow, you know, of course this is affecting everybody negatively, but you know, we need to somehow have the conversation, like to hear each other out, because right now it's just the pro-lockdown people screaming into an echo chamber. And then there's the people who want the lockdowns to end screaming into an echo chamber. And neither one of us, we're not getting anywhere. And a government that's completely unwilling to listen to either one of us. So I think that's just kind of, and I'll kind of go into that. And then just, you know, back and forth conversation of just, you know, some emotional kind of shit, like what it's all been, because in the news, I think what we're just seeing is numbers and case counts and stuff. And it's kind of, we're all desensitized. So we're just like, you know, whatever. And I think we're all frustrated with our government at this point and their lack of really their inaction and actions mm-hmm. have been detrimental to all of us. Mm-hmm. So, with that being said, is there anything that you in particular want me to ask you or not ask you about?
I'm just not really for having any like hostility. I know this is like, right. like something that's like close to both of our hearts, and I really commend you, and I really like want to take the chance to like thank you for opening this platform up and for us to be able to have this conversation as young women. Yeah. I think it's super important, especially for us to be able to showcase and show by example that like maybe we have different viewpoints, but it doesn't mean we can't have a productive conversation. Right. And maybe, you know, I'm super open to your viewpoints, and I like to think that I am a pretty receptive person, compassionate person, right? So I understand that like while we might have different angles on this, I think this is a really cool opportunity, and I really want to thank you for extending the branch and kind of you taking a step back and not just attacking me.
Totally. No, and I thank you for being open. I know. And that's the thing, is like it's so unfortunate because we're just pitting each other, like ourselves against each other at this point. And for what? Like it's we at the end of the day, we all want to survive. None of us want to, you know, lose our house. None of us want to go hungry. I don't want that for other people. I don't want it for myself. And so it's big of you too, to also come on here. And I was hoping to God, I was like, I hope she doesn't go look at some of my other shit that I've done and like be like, no way am I talking to this psycho. Like, cause yeah, I don't want this to in any way turn out into
if we can like agree that like,
yeah,
we'll keep it super respectful, amicable, like,
absolutely.
That's it.
Cool. That being said, like I will kind of like ask like honest question. I'm not going to attack you, but I still kind of will speak my side, and I want you to feel free to, you know, speak yours as well.
Mm-hmm.
Cool. All right. Cool. So then I guess
from the beginning.
Hmm?
So I'm not from Cold Lake, obviously. I am born and raised from in Winnipeg, Manitoba. I'm an only child. I come from a family of like 30 plus chiropractors. I come from a very alternative kind of I don't want to say lifestyle, but like just alternative views on westernized healthcare system. So my growing up, this was kind of the norm for me. However, my parents kind of my mom's side especially grew up kind of Western medicine. So I always saw like the both worlds kind of coming together. I saw a place for this. I saw a place for this. Right. And I grew up in a very holistic manner. I always loved people. I always was a little bit naive. And I think that's because I didn't have any siblings. So I never really had like that confrontation piece. But I went into nursing and moved away when I was 21, went into nursing school, and never moved back home. Ended up making my way out west out here with an ex-boyfriend, and started my nursing career out here in Cold Lake, actually. So most of my career has been spent up here as a nurse at the Cold Lake Health Center. So I've done and I've seen all the things. I specialized in labor and delivery. Obstetrics was kind of my bag. I did work in Edmonton for a little bit at the Grey Nuns, and then came back up here. So then when I came back up here, I was very isolated. My boyfriend at the time was a big hunter and fisher and was out in the bush all the time. And I was alone working shift work, exhausted, burnt out, depleted from, you know, the lack of supports and always staying late on shift, always running ragged the whole shift. Like you were lucky if you got a break type of things. Like, so, it was very early on in my career. Like I had been working, I think for 5 years already, but I was just like, this is not it. This is not sustainable for me. And I was a pioneer in bringing yoga and spin to Cold Lake. So I started with spin, and I was strapped for cash, strapped for real estate. So I shared the one studio space with my spin bikes and my hot yoga panels. So we would move 20 bikes out, turn the panels on, run hot yoga classes, cool the room down, move the bikes back in, And we did that for almost a year. And yoga was bleeding me dry because I didn't give it enough time and education and of a space for people to really get to know it. You know, Cold Lake. So it's a little bit not as forward thinking up here, right? It's like, ooh, yoga is spiritual, all these things. It needed a lot more education. It needed its own person to like run it. So I made the difficult decision to part ways with yoga. And so I was like 7 months pregnant when we got shut down the first time, and I was devastated.
Wow. So your son, right?
Yeah.
Your son, yeah. Has never lived life outside of COVID. Mm. That is mind blowing.
It makes me so sad.
Yeah. That is wild. Somebody told me that like a few months ago. They're like, yeah, my kid has spent half of their life in lockdown. And I was like, you, and I just put it together. I don't have children. So I was just like, oh my God, absolutely. Like if they are only a year old, they've never experienced life outside of coronavirus. Mm-hmm. That's wild. So you were 7 months pregnant. Mm-hmm. The first time you were shut down, and you were out of nursing by this point. You'd gone full into, okay. Yeah. Okay.
So I had stepped away from nursing. I had kept like a part-time license for the first 2 years that I was in operations, but then I just moved into like a, you can do like a non-practicing permit, where you don't have to like retest if ever you want to come back, but you're still kind of part of the college. So I did that. Like I was insane enough to be like, let's open a new business while I'm pregnant and having a newborn. But then we got shut down like on top of that.
Oh my God, that is so stressful. And then, so were you then, once the first kind of lockdown or set of restrictions eased up, you were able to open this new concept up?
Yeah.
And you were successful, like met with open arms?
Yeah. So people were very excited. So when we reopened, my son was 10 days old. I knew, I was like, I'm going to go into labor and then we're going to get the word that we're going to open and it's all going to happen. So I had like all my ducks in a row, all of my like emails, my protocols, because I was really studying what was going on in other provinces. I was in close contact with the health inspector. So I kind of had an idea of what was going to come down the pipes. So I had like scenario A, B, C, like everything curated, like ready to go. Because I knew, sure enough, I delivered, and my Bonneville owner texted me. She's like, they just passed, we're opening on the 19th. I was like,
wow.
So besides all of this, I always had child minding. So even though I didn't have kids, I recognize that in our community, it's a lot of military wives, it's a lot of oil field wives, there's a lot of isolated population in like the younger demographics that like, and I was in that demographic because I didn't have any friends up here. I didn't know anyone. So I really made it a point when I opened my business, and this is something that makes my model really unique, is that I had a lot of child minding. So I had moms who would come in and watch like six kids. So you could book your bike, you could book your child minding slot. And it became this community of like moms becoming friends, their kids growing up together. And I was like, cool, when I'm a mom, I'm going to have this system built in place for me, this like village, right? Nope.
But like, what a good concept.
And it's been wildly successful throughout like the other studios as well, and it is so unique to our business model, and it's so important. Like I'm so sad that we can't be offering that service anymore. I understand like the implications and why, absolutely, but it just like it breaks my heart, right? Because I saw the relationships that were formed from that, and I saw the lives that were changed from being able to offer that kind of service, right? Moms who would otherwise probably have spiraled into like postpartum depression, anxiety, right? This kind of was like their one thing that they did to get out of the house and do for themselves. And they could, the door shut, and they knew like my kid's well taken care of. If there's an emergency, they'll come get me. But otherwise, like I get to just be here, right?
Yeah.
So there's that component too, where I'm like, man, like my kid's almost a year old and he's not socialized. Like
But that is just, that's a heartbreaking. And you know, that kind of initiative is something that I just would get behind 100% all day, every day. That community, that sense of, you know, us all helping each other out. All like that is, I think, for me, what I have missed the most during this pandemic is just
what you do for a living, right? Being a bartender, like
Like that's all I do is like interact with people, and it's amazing too. I wouldn't say that I'm typically a very extroverted person, but when you have zero contact with anybody and like your livelihood goes from, you know, making hundreds of dollars of tips every single day to just nothing, just wondering, you know, when the next lockdown is going to happen, or, you know, if you are going to get full-time work, how to budget, like you can't, it's impossible. And so I very much so share in your just absolute despair for the loss of community, the loss of steady income. I think in your video, you did say that you are like $80,000 in the hole right now, on top of being a new mom, on top of being.
It was before I got my tax return on Friday, and I owe another $11,000. Like, how?
I'm so sorry. Like that.
I have a call with my accountant this week, but they want me to repay like $6,000 of my CERB, and I'm like, for what?
And that has to be, I think that is something that we should all come together and fight, because I was also a CERB recipient myself. Yeah. And the fact that, like, I don't think enough people realize that the government basically provided bailouts for corporations during this time. And some of these corporations that received financial support use that money to pay out shareholders and dividends. And if they don't have to repay that money, and, you know, us, you know, struggling business owners and just like crummy little bartenders, if they make us repay that and the others don't have to repay that, I think that we should riot. Like that is this, there's so much wrong with this shit right now that I don't even know where to start. Yeah. And I think that's like, all of our frustration.
I agree. I agree. I couldn't agree more. So it's all just been like
on top. Exactly.
Right? Like,
and we are all at our wit's end. I think that is very, very, very clear. That is. So I guess then I will kind of, now that I have, that's what I really wanted to know, was just kind of your background information. Mm-hmm. So that it's just, you know, people in my echo chamber, you know, I don't think we hear enough of these stories that personalize it, that, you know, you now I know you're a mom when you were doing, or you were about to be a mom when you're doing all this. Your child's been born into coronavirus. Your child hasn't been socialized. You're $100,000 at this point in debt. Like, these all make your frustrations so much more tangible and I don't want to say valid, because they've always been valid, but it's just put a face and a story to all of this. I think it really help all of us.
I struggle with sharing my story in these details because I don't want people, like, I don't know, I and this is my shit, but like, I don't want people to think like I'm out like they're being like, poor me, woe is me. Like, I know the risks of becoming a business owner. Like, I'm well aware, right? Like, so I struggle with like how much to share, because I don't want to come across as like, you not using that, but
no, but absolutely, and it's valid. Like, I mean, unfortunately, in the capitalist society that we live in, we need money to survive, and your revenue comes from your business. Mine comes from making drinks. Like, it's all of these are valid concerns. And I don't think that, I mean, I'm not trying to tell you how you should feel, but, you know, like, feeling these things and being at your wit's end is, I think, 14 months into this shit, pretty like a reasonable place to come from. But that being said, I guess I'll kind of spin into where I'm coming from and what I felt, why I guess I found your stance, the video, which I think I will like just play the audio for in the podcast, like just to kind of like, so people understand, you know, that you have taken the position of that you aren't going to follow the new restrictions, the new lockdown measures, and like some other restaurants and gyms have decided that you will remain open. I guess for me, I've started a group with physicians and economists, professionals, and activists in in Alberta. Some of us are located in Calgary, some are in Edmonton. And we started a group that advocates for a go for zero COVID approach to handling the pandemic. It's similar to what they successfully pulled off in Australia and New Zealand and a few other countries, but I think that those are the ones that everyone is kind of the most familiar with. And basically it's just like to pull it off, you have to have a complete lockdown. And it's our group's understanding that, you know, we haven't really had that kind of a lockdown in Alberta yet. We've had restrictions imposed, but the kind of lockdown that it takes to get to COVID zero, we haven't implemented here. It shuts down everything except for essential services, like hospitals, like
pharmacy, essential services.
Actual, like not, you can't still go to Winners. You can't still, you know, go sit on a patio. Like it was ghost town lockdown, right? And kind of honestly, from a lot of the people that I've spoken to who are, you know, just over lockdowns at this point, agree with us that, and they say, you know, if we had have done that at the very beginning, like they had have, I would have been on board. But we're 14 months into this. People are losing their businesses. Like, what, you know, at this point, how much longer could we go? So our group, and there's also a Canadian group, which I'm not part of, that's advocating for a go for zero approach, is basically asking the government to shut down, basically exactly what you're against is what my group is advocating for. And so we want, at this point with the new variants, unfortunately it would be a 10 to 13 week lockdown. And it just means essential services. Like it's just obviously first responders and hospitals, grocery stores, liquor store, and just the bare necessities. And you know, it's we call for strong financial support from the government, so that people, like for small businesses and for people, they need to have support to stay home, to not go to work. So we're not just asking for a lockdown to completely, you know, just say, well, everybody's going to have to just, you know, figure it out. We're advocating for what basically was done in Australia and New Zealand. And when I said, like, these are the things we do have in common, is that we both believe that, I think that you and I would both kind of agree in like a holistic approach to life. I think we have that in common. I think that we have the fact that we believe physical activity is important. We have that in common. I think that we both don't like the way that this government has managed this pandemic. I think that that is something we have in common. And we do have a lot of things in common. I just found it problematic, I guess, in your video, that to me it felt like you were saying, I want to open up for you, for the community, for our mental well-being. I think you mentioned that some of your clients actually were considering taking their own lives, that you know, they needed this outlet. And then kind of almost in the same breath saying, like, I'm $80,000 in debt, which it's valid and this is valid, but I just felt that maybe it was a bit disingenuous to say that, you know, I want to open up for your welfare, but like, I guess it couldn't be, they need to know that it's also, you'd have a motive behind that as well, of course. Like, you don't operate your business for free. And a woman such as yourself, who has found success, who is probably inspirational to a lot of the women in the community, as a successful, young, pretty entrepreneur, like, people invest a lot of, I think, trust in you. And I don't like to use the word influencer because I think it's corny as hell. But, you know, you do hold, I would say, a fair amount of influence in the Lakeland. And so when you say something like, you know, transmissions can't be traced back to, you know, our studio, it's one of the safer things you can do. We should open up. It's good for your mental health, your physical health, and all these things. It's, you know, they are trusting you in a way, and, you know, you are responsible for saying that, and, you know, mm-hmm. for creating a safe space for them. And I just think that, like, personally, me knowing some of these people, like, it's just if one of them did contract COVID, especially with the new variants, which are almost twice as contagious, I'm sure that you're mm-hmm. well aware because you can speak the medical lingo, that it is more and more increasingly likely that they would contract COVID-19 in one of your spaces, and then it's just or one of the variants in your spaces, and it's just, you know, at what point does that impact their mental well, or everybody, the whole community's well-being, you know, like, it's just when I could actually picture a face there mm-hmm. becoming infected with COVID or dying from COVID, like these people that I went to high school with, it's sad. And so it's one of those things where I've taken spin class. I love spin class. I love yoga. But it's one of those things that, you know, for what price? Like, there are other ways that you can work out and be healthy during these times. And we're at this point where we had on Friday more cases, or the highest number of cases on record for this year. And the variants are now taking over as the main strain. It's just kind of seems like one of these things where it's a little bit too naive to think that these atmospheres, like, having taken a spin class myself, it's the hardest shit I've ever done in my life. Like, it's pretty go, go, go. And to think that being in a room, you know, and doing these high intensity exercises doesn't elevate the risk to something that is perhaps not worth the benefits of a spin class, maybe not outweighing the consequences of one of them dying or infecting others in the community. And, you know, the fact is that the small, like, the rural approach that some of the MLAs are now kind of advocating for, there are significant outbreaks now in smaller places like Pinoca and Grand Prairie and these other places that people were saying were safe. And your MLA, David Hansen,
yeah,
for Cold Lake, Bonnieville, St. Paul. He was one of the UCP MLAs to sign on to the statement saying that, you know, they're not for the restrictions. So, like, in a way, the people, you know, in your area, he's listening to what his constituents are saying and bringing it back. And, you know, when all of a sudden the MLAs are kind of in opposition to their own government, mm-hmm. It does kind of start creating a sense of division, and, like, who can you trust? Who do you listen to at this point? You know, when a quarter of the party is basically saying, like, we don't agree with the new restrictions. And then, you know, the premier saying, well, these are the restrictions. Like, I don't know, I guess I'm just kind of at the point where, you know, my question to you is, as a spiritual person, as a person who is part of the cultivated a community in the Lakeland, you know, is it worth the risk? Is it worth, like, one of those spin seats never, you know, having the same client in it again? Like, is there another avenue, do you think, that we could all, like, you and I and everybody there, get behind to advocate for more support for your business, for something? Have you tried to advocate? Like, have you?
100%. I think if I was to be handed a legitimate amount of money to be like, hey, bring your operations outside, I'd be there yesterday.
Right. And is that something that is, like, could you move the bikes outside? Is that something that is feasible? Like,
Not really. We're on the second floor. It's a lot of manpower. It's a lot of work. It's weather dependent. Right. It's a lot of money to put out and a lot of manpower and a lot of bodies to ask for right. to do the help and stuff like that. Like, so it translates into paying people, et cetera, et cetera.
Right. So what about like, if you were offered like a fair, what I believe that what the UCP is offering small business owners and individuals to, is nowhere near enough. It's absolutely 14 months into this.
There's a lot of loopholes in it too. Like I don't even think I qualify.
I wouldn't doubt it. So many people have fallen through the cracks that I'm not completely well versed in all of that, but it's from what I've seen, it's not enough money for the people who do qualify for it. So I guess it's just at my point, just where I found the most frustration was I just found the video to be a little bit I don't want to continue saying disingenuous, but just a little bit hypocritical to say, like, you know, health and wellness, mental.
It's all not of just one or the other, right? Like, I'm here 14 months in and there's 7 issues with this lockdown that keeps happening. And I want to say that, like, I'm for a like legitimate shut this shit down. Let's get it over with so we can all move on with our lives. What I have a problem with is the same industries that are getting slapped and slapped and slapped again and again and again. While Winners, liquor stores, they all get to profit and it's considered essential. Starbucks, right? Like, so if people aren't spending their money in your business, they're spending it elsewhere. Like, that's fine. But like, there's just, it's not just a linear thing. There's a lot of entanglement in it. And me staying open isn't me saying I don't care. There's a few different layers to it, right? And at the end of the day, if I don't keep my doors open, I can't guarantee that I will be able to reopen them at all.
Right. No, and I mean, I get that, like, there are so many moving parts and I don't have the answers. That's a big reason why I wanted to.
But I want to say, like, I am all for a COVID zero number, but like, let's stop pretending like these lockdowns are actually doing anything.
As far as I'm concerned, we've never had a lockdown in Alberta, and I'm not for, I mean, I guess I shouldn't say I'm not for this lockdown. I don't think that we should still have, you know, restaurants at operating at full capacity or whatever, and or gyms operating at capacity. I don't think that we should have all that. I'm grateful that a little bit has been implemented, but at the same time, it's just, I've got no skin in the game in a business here. Mm-hmm. So I would rather people will argue with the going for zero now and having a complete lockdown, that it's too late. But I don't understand that argument. I understand, like, without financial support, it might be too late for some people. You know, they might lose their business. But, you know, like, it's just, I likened it to, you know, say a year ago, you decided you were going to lose 50 pounds and then you didn't do anything. And it was a year later and you realized, oh shit, I didn't lose the weight. I didn't, you know, start eating healthy. I didn't start exercising. Would you just like write it off for the rest of your life? Mm-hmm. Like, just write it off at that point. Like, you know, well, it's too late now. Or would you like, we could start, if we implemented the lockdown today, there is still a very good chance that we could have the Calgary Stampede, that we could literally be in August, having music festivals, having, you know, going back to normal, like what we're seeing in New Zealand and Australia and even the Atlantic bubble in Canada, which implemented largely a COVID zero approach, but just on a very small scale. And that's just the thing, is like, I don't know what the answer is to the businesses who are saying, you know what, we're defying the restrictions, we're gonna stay open. If that is the kind of, everyone's feeling so hopeless at this point because they don't think the government is going to help them. They're implementing half measures that have not been effective the past 2 times. Why would they be effective the 3rd time when we're dealing with variants that are twice as contagious? You know, like I understand that completely, you know, but it's like, but what can we all come together for and try to advocate for, try to change, try to force the government to do something, because this isn't mm-hmm. going to work for anyone. People are mm-hmm. more people are going to be infected, more people are going to die, more people are going to lose their small businesses. Like, I'm not going to lie, you like if we have to go through this third lockdown and you get, like, say you're planning on defying the restrictions and you get shut down anyway, you're probably not going to make it, are you? Like, to the next, like, because then we're going to have to start, we're going to have the case numbers up here again, mm-hmm. and we're going to have to go through a point to help bring it down. So that's mm-hmm. even more restrictions. And then what, best case scenario at that point, we implement a go for zero lockdown policy, but that's another 10 to 13 weeks. Like, the people who are on the brink now can't afford not to either advocate for a go for zero approach now. Mm-hmm. Or like, it's just, I just really don't think just staying open is going to, it might buy a little bit of time for your business, but it's just, we're just going to see the numbers skyrocket. And then what? Like, it's not going to be.
My other issue is, how are we part of the problem when we've been shut down for 7 out of the last 12 months? This is the first, I've only been defying the order for less than a week.
Right.
I've been shut down for, and I only reopened my studio because I completely changed my program to be low intensity. I shouldn't have been even operating spin classes, but I completely remodeled it, cut the time in half. We don't go above a certain beat per minute. Like, we keep it very low key, lots of permission. We stop our legs, we focus on upper body. Like, and so, like, to me, it's like, again, the data doesn't support. We've asked the government for data from our province. Please tell us why you chose to close down gyms. What is the statistics? Where are the cases coming from? Blah, 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 blah. And at that point, we got, oh, it's 242 backlogged with our contact tracing. We can't get you the data. This is in November when we got shut down. In January, again, we were promised numbers, never got the numbers, and we're still waiting on the numbers to support continuing to close the gyms. And so my frustration also is, we've been closed. Like, the spike after Christmas that happened, we were still closed. I was closed from November till the end of March.
Completely?
I've literally only been reopened since March 20th. So I've only been open for 3 weeks. Not even, and they wanted to shut us down again. So that's where I'm like, yeah. I have zero cases and I can't wrap my head around us being the part of the problem or the spread or these spikes, because the data doesn't support it and you won't provide us with data that supports it. We're asking for data that supports it. And we literally haven't even been open enough in operating in any measures that would promote, like, we're not even doing high intensity. We're masked. We're 3 meters apart. We're right. Like, people that are literally walking in, going to their bike is getting like hosed down with hospital grade cleaner and like rinse and repeat. Right. Like, so that's where I have an issue with, like, yes, I agree with everything that you're saying, but like, it doesn't add up.
Right. But in like another huge problem, like, I understand your frustration and it is absolutely warranted. But the problem in it is that this government, our province, has never had control of contact tracing at any point.
Yeah.
We've never. And so they actually don't have sector specific data because they've just never had it. We've never mm-hmm. had an effective contact tracing system. This government tried to implement something called Alberta Trace Together. I don't know if you've ever tried to download it on your phone, but mm-hmm. it's been proven that it doesn't even work on iPhones, which is what the majority of Albertans actually have. We've never ever had any kind of control over contact tracing. So that is just something that I think that a lot of people should be aware of, and something mm-hmm. that is actually really fucking embarrassing.
That admit to it, like,
well, and that's the thing.
I mean, like, none of the officials will admit to that.
No, and they won't. And what they keep doing is they keep on like doubling down on their app that literally, like, people who create apps for a living, people who program, people who, you know, have dealt with this kind of shit before, are saying your app is shit. And they spent almost $1 million on this app. And the government of Canada, the federal COVID alert app, which was supposed to be available to all Canadians was actually developed on a volunteer basis. So it costs taxpayers almost nothing. And it works on iPhones because it has the permissions to get around the firewall or whatever the case may be on an iPhone and on Androids. Every other province has it except for Alberta and BC. And then I believe two territories don't have it, but everybody else gets it. And it doesn't invade any privacy. It's a really, the way it works is actually genius. And our government they are so fucking petty that they won't admit defeat, that their shitty app didn't work. And it simply never will, just because of a lot of the way of because how Apple does mandate their app store and all this shit, their app just won't work. But they simply will not say, okay, Justin Trudeau, your app worked, ours didn't, we'll give it to Albertans. That alone could have been one of the tools in the tool belt. I'm not saying it would have stopped the spread of COVID in Alberta, but it could have helped with contact tracing. Mm-hmm. So when the government says that they can't provide you with sector-specific data, they're not lying, but it's because they've never had control. Like if you look at some of the bar graphs of where the cases are, the one that's or where they're coming from, the one that's unknown is drastically bigger than all the rest. Like, okay, like this one might be from here, from there. And the only reason that they know about, okay, like this many are coming maybe from restaurants or schools or social gatherings, the only reason they really know about these ones is because they've downloaded the contract tracing onto, I don't know if it's for you in your spin studio where you have to get people to sign in and sign out so you can do your own contact tracing, but they've downgraded it to restaurants. So a lot of restaurants you go to, you have to sign in. Schools are doing their own contact tracing through things like Facebook. Like I've talked to moms and stuff who, and teachers and principals who are finding out about cases in their school from fucking Facebook. Like our government has downgraded contact tracing onto like literal citizens. And so we've never had any kind of control over that at any point. So I guess my concern with you saying that is it's in one breath it's true, like they can't prove that the cases aren't coming from here or there, or that gyms aren't a super spreader, but it's literally because they can't prove it. They don't know where the bulk of the cases are coming from. And then so I think they are just kind of going, well, like, I mean, places where people get sweaty and breathe all over each other, probably that's probably not a good idea to keep these places open. Places where people go and drink and get drunk and are all over each other, we should probably shut some of these places down. And so I agree, it's frustrating to see the same businesses keep getting hit with the restrictions, but it's kind of also like, if you had to guess, because that's what our government has to do at this point, like where you'd probably get COVID, that's like all they're fucking doing. They have no idea like where the bulk of the cases are coming from. So
people are defying the orders, like people are gathering and people are having parties and people are getting social, like,
well, absolutely. And like I live downtown Calgary, and so basically since like the masks, like once they were, I think they were mandated in the beginning of August or the beginning of September in Calgary that you have to wear a mask of 2020, and basically since then every fucking weekend there's a protest of anti-masker unity rally that have since then turned into like literal white supremacist tiki torch marches. So it's been fucking a wild and crazy time to live in. Either both Calgary and Edmonton are both having these problems. But like, it's so fucking beyond frustrating. I'm sure like you as a business owner who has tried to go above and beyond to follow all of the restrictions and the protocols, and people like myself who, I live alone and I have one cohort and I have not seen friends. I have not, I haven't gone out to a restaurant.
My kids been born.
Right. Like I have not. And there's people like, I see like fucking my friends on social media that have been out in the bars, that have been just not giving a fuck, that have been wilding out, like, as soon as the restaurants reopen, that have been having parties, that have been doing this dumb shit. And there's so many of us that are just like, you know, you have shit on the line, you, that you could lose your business, your house, your everything you fucking own. And the rest of us like sitting in our houses that are just like waiting for our jobs to come back or not. And, you know, we're doing.
It's happening at O2s, and I see snaps of people that are at tables together. And I'm like, I know y'all don't live together.
Right. Like, that's the thing. I'm walking down Stephen Ave in Calgary looking at packed restaurants, and I'm like, wow, like this group of like five businessmen live together. Cool. Like they all have wedding rings on. I'm like, what kind of cool commune are all of these people in Calgary living in? And it's like, they only get to do that off the back of people like you and I who have been, you know, listening and not going out. Like that's the only reason the numbers get low enough so that we can do these like reopenings, so they can go and do that. And it's so fucking, I know you're frustrated and I'm fucking beyond frustrated, but I just don't, I see like now a few restaurants and gyms that are just like, well, we're gonna stay open, and it, like it, I don't know what the answer is, and we are all at our wit's end. But I just think that the argument of like, well, they won't tell us if cases are coming from here. Well, they don't know. And you might not have had any outbreaks in your studio yet that you can prove or whatever, but it doesn't mean that also like with the new variants that are twice as contagious, that it won't happen. Mm-hmm. And I guess it's, yeah, it just comes down to, you know, at what, I don't know if you could get everybody in your community to kind of get on board with a lockdown. I know it's probably not easy in rural Alberta. It's hard enough, even in the major cities. We have a lot of people who are just like, they think it's a hoax, or they think it's, you know, not as serious as it is. And I'm sure that's even
it's a real injustice to COVID-19, how it's been handled though. Right. Like, so I feel like it wouldn't have this bad reputation of being a hoax or whatever had our government gotten its shit together.
Yeah. Right? I mean, I guess I agree, but like, especially when it comes to the UCP and the conservative premiers, pretty much across Canada, the way that they've kind of handled it, it absolutely, I think, put seeds of doubt in a lot of people's mind. Like, okay, like Jason Kenney has used language that does kind of make it seem that downplays the seriousness of it altogether. So I agree. But I also did, that's another thing I kind of found a little bit problematic in your video, was just that you know, you said like COVID, or, you know, like the fact that there are no flus going around, just like as an RN, as somebody who's been a part of the medical community, it's COVID-19 very much so is a thing that shouldn't be downplayed, that shouldn't, you know, that we shouldn't be saying it's just the flu. And I found it, like I said earlier, like you are an influential person in your community, whether you like it or not. And, you know, kind of using that language, maybe you believe that COVID is just the flu or whatever, but I just found that also a little bit problematic, because that's the same kind of language that some of the government officials and some, you know, of the people who do deny the severity of COVID do use. They say, you know, well,
I appreciate that you're saying, and I will definitely take that into consideration in my delivery. So thank you for bringing that to my attention. But what I was more implying was the flu is a crisis, not pandemic, but it's a big deal every year. The flu, when the flu hits the wards, like it's a big deal. And so to me, it just feels like all of a sudden we're not seeing any influenza cases. It's all and only COVID. And it's just all day, every day. So it's just, I feel like it's been downplayed, like the reality and the crises that have occurred annually for however long the flu's been around, right? It just feels like we're not giving it the magnitude that it had, right? It's just kind of like, oh, that's all been forgotten. Now it's just COVID. And it's like, no, this has actually been a thing that's been hitting the elderly and the vulnerable for years, but it's never been talked about. And it's actually been flooding our hospital beds and our ICU beds for years. But now all of a sudden, like, the light is being shone on this. It's just, it's interesting.
Right. And, but I do think that, like, COVID, I mean, we can absolutely change our, I think, lenses as citizens to say, like, the flu season is something, you know, that we should be more mindful of. And maybe we should all wear, you know, masks out in public during flu season to protect the vulnerable, because we actually have seen less cases this year from, I think, largely from so many people staying home and from so many people wearing masks when they're out in the public. But that being said, like, the, with these new variants, it's not just affecting the elderly and the immunocompromised and the more vulnerable, which is, I think, is something that unfortunately a lot of people thought, well, it's okay because those people get infected with the flu anyways, and, you know, they're old or they're vulnerable, and, you know, they don't need, you know, they would have died anyway. I think, unfortunately, that's been a really heartbreaking take that a lot of people have kind of gotten on board with. Like, well, you know, fuck it, I'm not old, I'm not immunocompromised, I'm not, you know, vulnerable, so I'm going to go to the bar. And, you know, their argument being, well, the flu would have got them anyway. But I guess it's just going to be interesting now to see what these new variants, they are affecting younger people. And in fact, they're the COVID cases in Alberta right now, the largest amounts are between 20 and 29 year olds have 41% of the active cases, and between 30 and 59 have 30% of the active cases. And one of the lowest number of active cases in Alberta are actually in the like 80 plus category of people. So I was just kind of thinking, like, the people who do attend your STEM classes are actually, like, probably between the ages of 20 and 59. And when you put those two groups together, where most of the active cases are actually occurring in Alberta, that's 71% of the active cases are actually in the age group that I believe would probably be attending a STEM class, you know, from 20 to 59. I would assume most, if not all, of your clients fall into that category. So it's actually, I don't know, maybe some people haven't been, you know, kind of paying attention to how much it's shifted, but the people who are getting infected now, especially with the new variants, the elderly and, you know, the immunocompromised who have been staying at home and who have gotten the vaccinations, they're actually at the least amount of active cases now in Alberta. And it's just, now that we're kind of learning about long COVID and the longer, like, long-term health effects that it could cause, that people still aren't feeling, you know, right a year after getting COVID-19, it's just something that it's like, are we really prepared to live with a chronic illness, you know, for the rest of our lives? When we might not die, I might not die because I'm personally, you know, I'm a healthy person, I'm reasonably fit, I think I'd probably make it, but, you know, it doesn't mean that I wouldn't have long-term side effects for the rest of my life. We don't know enough about this virus. And it's just shocking to me how much people are willing to risk, to just be like, well, I probably won't die. Your kids' grandparents might, but I won't. And even if you have that mindset, you might not die, but we don't know enough about this disease to know that you're not going to be, like, permanently fucked for the rest of your life in some capacity, whether it's, you know, with your lungs, or people are saying they're having mental kind of disorders and things that are coming out of this. It's just, we don't fucking know. We don't know enough about this to be banking, I think, as much shit as we are on it. And I don't know. I also, it just kind of scares me for, like, your area with your, the MLA in your area actually saying that, signing that statement with the 15 other or 14 other UCPL MLAs saying, you know, like, we don't really think that it's, that these restrictions should be in place. Like, of course that sends messaging out to your community who, you know, are just citizens who are just trying to get by, who are trying to navigate this. When you have a politician or elected representative who is supposed to be, like, out there for your best interest, when you have them spreading the messaging, like, yeah, we don't need these restrictions. Honestly, like, No shit. Some people feel that way. If you're not actively involved in politics and following, you know, like if I wasn't part of the groups that I'm part of and that like following the politics that I'm following, I wouldn't have any fucking clue about any of this. And the only reason I do, I have the time to do this. I'm an unemployed fucking bartender. I don't have any kids. I can keep up with this shit, but how the hell is anybody else supposed to? And that's why we have elected officials, is because we elect them to have our back and to represent us. And when you're representative is sending a statement out saying that we don't agree with the restrictions, the average person that I, you know, that I know from the fucking Lakeland is probably just gonna, all right. I mean, I guess he probably know, he's listening to the chief medical officer of health. He's, you know, like, it's just, there's a lot of trust invested into these people. And when they are signaling that the restrictions don't need to be happening, you can hardly blame the people that are, you know.
I agree. I just wish they would come at it with a different strategy.
Right.
Like I'm really feeling like, you know, when you're in a shitty relationship and you're like so far and you're like, but I just love them. And like everyone else is like, oh my God, like they're toxic for you. What are you doing? Right. And then once you leave that relationship, you're like, oh my God, what was I thinking? Like, I feel like that's where we're at. Like, we're just so deep in. We need someone else to come and like make decisions for us and like put on a lockdown or do something, because clearly we cannot be trusted to make our own choices anymore. Like, we're all too emotionally invested. We're all like, we all have our own. Yeah. Like, I just feel like
we're all at our wit's end, and we've all, I'm like, I think at this point you'd have to be mad to think that this exact same lockdown restriction is going to somehow have a different outcome than the previous ones, even though we now are dealing with variants that are twice as contagious. Like I agree, like we either need to have a complete lockdown or the rest of this is, it's bullshit. We're not going to get anywhere. And like you said, we've tried it and here we are 14 months later.
I know. I'm curious your take on, I really am valuing this conversation we're having because I like to think that I'm a pretty like openly receptive person. And I think a part of my decision-making process also is my surroundings, right? Like I'm kind of on this end of the spectrum. I'm living it, right? On my people who are coming to the studios need it, want it, love it, right? And so I feel like for as much as I try not to be skewed, I am a little bit skewed, right, in my decision-making process for reasons X, Y, and Z. But I'm curious to hear your take, a fresh take on what your feelings and thoughts are of what's going on in the States, where they're kind of allowing sports events and games and kind of ending the lockdown, and their cases are supposedly going down and stuff. Like what do you attribute to being?
Well, I mean, I know that the United States are, they're doing a whole lot better with their vaccine rollout. I think that there is a lot of misinformation circulating around Texas. Like I've seen a few people claiming that, you know, we should be, you know, like just let's do what Texas has done, but they're, I don't know the numbers off the top of my head about how many people who have died or are currently infected in Texas, but it is in no way something that we should strive for, think that they're doing okay. It's a lot of these states like Texas and Florida are not all right. But the fact of the matter is I have friends back in New York that they're my age and they have both their vaccines already. They're reopening restaurants to indoor dining. They're starting to go about their life. And also just the fact that we don't have the ability to make vaccines here in Canada ourselves. We're dependent on bringing vaccines in. And so as we've kind of seen through, I don't believe any fault of Justin Trudeau. I'm not a liberal, but through no fault of Justin Trudeau, really, the procurement of vaccines in Canada has been shaky just because we have to depend on others to bring it in, whereas they don't have to. So that being said, is like, we still don't really have we don't know for sure when we'll have all the vaccines that we need. It looked really promising at first. And I think that that gave people a false sense of security. And too many people thought that the vaccine would be the silver bullet, that that would fix us, when it should have been treated as just a tool in our tool belt. And that keeping numbers down to a minimum would have been honestly more efficient than just letting some provinces go buck wild and like the vaccine will be here. The fact that we have to rely on different countries, I think, puts us in a different place than the United States. Mm-hmm. And just the fact that they are so much further ahead in the vaccine rollout, they're actually starting to advise Americans not to, you know, travel, like that traveling to and from Canada is not, if you can avoid it at all, because we all of a sudden are, you know, doing worse than they are, which is something I never thought that we would see, because I think our Canadian exceptionalism, we like to say like, well, at least we're not the United States, where the fact of the matter is in some states they have handled it better. But I did see some misinformation circulating about Texas and Florida saying like, well, they just reopened back up and everything's fine there. The truth of the matter is everything is not fine there. Mm-hmm. I think that having this conversation, I agree, like I realized that I was stuck in my own echo chamber. And I think that's kind of what you're saying too. Like you're surrounded by a community who's like, open up this thing, class, you know, I need it. You also probably have very emotional messages from kind of what you said about like, they are saying that they're, you know, depressed, that they need spin. Like you're being influenced by these voices around you. And also just by the sentiment of the Lakeland. Like if your MLA is one of the MLAs who said, we don't support the restrictions, Jason Kenney, you can't really deny that probably a lot of the people in your community are people who, you know, don't want to lock down.
And why I had to go on social media on the phone hiatus this weekend is because I was so overwhelmed with like the support.
Right.
Like, it was just as overwhelming and like just as like emotionally taxing, all of the like rah-rah, you go girl, like all of that shit. Like it was just, yeah, I was not prepared.
Right. And that's what I think kind of shocked me, because like in my circles, anybody who says that they're not for a lockdown is like, you don't say that out loud. Like it doesn't exist in my circle. So even when I was going through the comments on your video, I was sitting there like,
there's not one mean one on that video.
No, and I was shocked. I'm like, am I gonna be the one? Am I gonna be the one? Like, and I had to just turn off my phone for the night because I had some mean shit right now. But then I'm looking, I'm like, I know her. I can't say this shit. And so I just turned off my phone. I said, okay, figure it out. Maybe talk to her. Answer in the morning. You know, just don't do it. But I was shocked by the comments. I'm like, what the hell is going on in the Lakeland? Why don't think a lockdown is good? And so I was just like, I think it's important that, you know, I get out of my chamber, you get out of yours, because it's not healthy when we're just hearing people who are reaffirming our stance.
I think it's important, and what this conversation really like brought to light for me was, I think the term lockdown needs to be like changed, or like I think like the language that's used needs to be right, because like we got on this call and I'm like, no, I'm totally pro lockdown, like I'm totally pro, like right. Let's get this shit over with, right. 100%. Did we miss the mark? Yeah, we did, but better late than never. But like, let's actually do something productive. This like wishy-washy, low intensity, high intensity, what the fuck is low? Like, right?
Right.
It's all just so subjective. Like, let's just like make it happen. I'm even like to the point of like, if you need groceries, you call for a delivery service. Like,
yeah.
Well, like automated, whatever, like, those people have very regimented ways of going about their jobs, like whatever. But like, I just think we just keep shooting ourselves in the foot with what we're doing.
Absolutely. And like, I think that a lot of the language is charged, and what you're saying, I agree with, and I hadn't really thought about, but just like, yeah, like the way we are using the word lockdown and not really having a concrete definition as to what that is. Like, you know, you and I are both for the exact same type of lockdown.
And I think if the conversation could change
right
to that, we would probably get somewhere.
get somewhere. I agree. And I think that that maybe that should be the, I don't know, maybe call to action from this conversation, is that we need to, as community members, as Albertans, as Canadian society, you know, like, what, you know, are we for? This is what the word lockdown means, and are you for it? Because I think too much, you're right, is getting lost in, well, I'm not for, like, when you said in the comments, and everybody there saying, I'm not for this lockdown, I'm not for these restrictions, I'm reading it like, these fucking lunatics in the Lakeland, these rural Albertans, you know, they don't give a shit. They're anti-lockdown. They're probably anti-maskers. Like, that's where my brain is going. But just through having this conversation, it's like, no, we're actually like, we're just not for this kind of lockdown again, because it hasn't been effective before. When would it be effective? Like, and that is just absolutely, I think, something that is to a large extent a problem in Canada between the left and the right. It's just like, we use this really charged language, and we don't really have, I think, clear ideas to what it means. And when one of us says it, you know, the other one takes offense, and it's just too charged and nobody really knows. And we end up fighting each other, even though we're all after the same thing. And it's just toxic. And I don't know how we get around it, but maybe it's just, do you think, like, I mean, I'm not asking you to speak on behalf of the Lakeland by any means, but do you think that a lot of the people there would be in favor of an actual lockdown that was financially supported by the government? So people who work would be getting paid, kind of like the CERB, like implement something like CERB, but even make it more available, because a lot of people didn't qualify for it or are having to repay it back.
Pause payments again, like a lot of banks and stuff, pause mortgages, like pause car payments, pause whatever, like, or throw the money into a collective pool that pays for everyone's gas and electric and whatever. Like, it doesn't, like, maybe if you don't, and I think a lot of the argument was like, okay, these people are getting this $2,000 check and they're like going and building a deck with it or doing this with it. Like, it's not, the money's not being utilized.
Right.
Matter it's supposed to. So maybe the government takes control and it's like, hey, we'll pay your gas and your power for these 3 months or whatever, and let's create a solution. I think if it was presented in a matter where it was like, hey, let's, we all want the collective goal of like, let's see this thing go away for everyone's benefit, everyone's mental wellness, long-term, short-term, whatever it means to you, let's do it. I think there would be a lot of support in for that if we were supported and if we felt like our rights were not cherry picked.
Right. No, and I mean, I couldn't agree more. And I just don't.
Right.
And I've always felt that it was the one that the businesses, they say, can you stay open, the ones who can't. The fact that we still have like in-person school and shit, and they think that the kids aren't part of the transmission, like all of this stuff, I've always been like, who's coming up with these? Are you just like picking shit out of a hat and being like, this, these are the things that, you know, we can't, like, people are acting like they understand this virus and like the virus is going to obey restrictions, like when they're like, okay, well, indoor dining but only till 10, like Corona's like gonna wait there and be like, can't go, oh, it's 11, surprise, motherfuckers.
Yeah, like those kind of restrictions, I'm like, congratulations, yeah, you're stopping liquor sales at 10 instead of 11. Like,
right, like, do you have COVID on the phone where you guys like make agreements and they're just gonna follow these, you know, they're not gonna go into libraries, or they'll go into libraries but not bookstores, so let's close libraries, keep bookstores open, only patios, no indoor, it's just so obscure that I'm like, who even believes this shit? Like, who is like, okay, well, I'm safe in a bookstore but not a library. Like, also though, I think it speaks to us as like human beings, like, what the fuck's the matter with us? Like, this shit doesn't make sense.
That's where I think a lot of the credibility is being lost with the more of these lockdowns that keep happening, right? Because they're not sensible.
Right. And that's, I mean, I think that just the division amongst the government, the UCP government in and of itself is just, who do you believe at this point? Who do you trust? Like, it's a credibility issue completely, but I mean, I don't know if I have much more. Those were, I guess, kind of just some of the issues that I took up with your video that I would have probably just commented something I had some pretty choice comments typed out, but I'm glad that we could have this talk, and it's been
and for me that video was like super emotionally charged, right?
Absolutely.
Like, I'm like crying at the beginning, so like I didn't really, and I've watched it a million times, and I'm like, oh, I sound like I'm fat shaming. Oh, and like I've picked myself apart. Like, don't worry.
No, and like absolutely. And I mean, I've been there too before, where it's just like I've been, you know, on Twitter and with TikToks and stuff, and getting canceled for this, that, and the other thing. And you pick yourself apart more than anybody else could. So I think it's more beneficial sometimes to have a talk with that person than it is to just like lay them out. Like, I could have taken that video, uploaded it to Twitter, and been like, look at this anti-masker lunatic in Northern Alberta who is going to defy public health laws. And my echo chamber on Twitter or whatever, if you know, would have just absolutely eaten it alive. Would have eaten it alive. They would have went with it. And where would that hasn't gotten me. I've done it in the past. I'm not proud like of it because it hasn't gotten us anywhere. It's just divided us more. So it's just like, where has that gotten us? Something's not working. Something's not clicking. Mm-hmm. And how do we have these conversations where it's like, okay, what are we actually going to do? Because our government isn't doing shit. People are losing their businesses. People are losing their fucking minds. So it's just, I think, important that we have these conversations. And I'm so like thankful that you did. And this has been incredible. So thank you. Mm-hmm.
It's like the corny, you know, history will repeat itself, like until we can like come together and band together. Like, we all want the same common goal. Right. We all want to be able to live, you know, a life that is full and rich and safe and, you know, all those good things. And we've all feel like everyone has sacrificed, right? Like everyone has sacrificed. Absolutely. In this pandemic. And yeah, I think the narrative needs to change. And I don't know how you and I as young women can spearhead this, but like, if it doesn't start here, where does it start? Right. And I am going to come away from this conversation and like really rethink my approach.
Oh, and that's, I mean, I'm also, this has been so rich for me as well. And just like, how do we continue to advocate for a COVID zero to, you know, the people that already agree with us. We don't need to change their mind, but like, if our, like, thinking of how we can change our messaging to, you know, this is what we mean by a lockdown, and like sell that to the people who are just frustrated with the current restrictions, but not necessarily anti-lockdown. Like, mm-hmm. This conversation has been absolutely pivotal in changing, you know, how we will approach that. So. Mm-hmm. Seriously, thank you, because I couldn't agree more. We need to come together, because this division has gotten us absolutely nowhere. And if our, you know, government isn't going to help us, what can we do as, you know, people? And just, we could all kind of just come to a collective set of agreements and advocate for that and hopefully get somewhere with this government. That's the other thing, is they don't really seem to be listening to us. So many of us just feel completely abandoned by this government. And that is something that the right and the left and the anti-maskers and the maskers, or whatever you call the people who wear masks, mm-hmm. is something we all have in common, is we just really have no faith left in this government. So no. I don't know. But with that, is there any other kind of questions you have, or anything else you want to touch on, or a call to, I mean, I don't know what the call to action is at this point. I think maybe just kind of putting this conversation out there. Maybe we can like work together, or
like, can we like be friends or something?
Yeah,
like,
absolutely.
So there you have it, folks. That's my conversation with Danica. Please note that since this conversation took place, Danica has closed the doors to her spin studio until further notice. While I'm glad that she made this decision, I can't help but feel heartbroken for her and for so many others who have lost or are about to lose their businesses. And I want to remind everyone that it did not have to be this way. If our government had have taken swift and decisive action from the start, we would not be here. Instead, they've implemented roller coaster lockdowns that have crushed small businesses, overwhelmed hospitals, caused needless suffering and deaths that could have been prevented. I urge everyone listening to write to their MLA and demand a COVID zero lockdown in our province immediately. If you'd like further resources or if you need help doing so, please contact me at emmadidi@wildbroscountry.com. Take care out there, everyone. Please stay home and stay safe. Love, Em.